Hello, and welcome to another Hometown Daily News Show. Today's episode is episode 162. It's for June 11th, 2022. I am Mayor Watt. That is Hometown. Okay. So today's episode is going to cover about 20 articles. Again, they range the gamut. They range the range of creator or create is the name of the section. News, which is kind of a general news thing, not particularly focused on any one topic. Because I have things that are hyper focused in business, I've created a general category called news. But within it are broader categories, or I should say a little bit more niche, not as broad. And even within this, there is an even deeper level of categorization as you break out across the other categories. So there's create, news, education, entertainment, social, and technology. Technology is by far the biggest grouping of news that I aggregate. And that's what Hometown is. Hometown.com is a news aggregation site that focuses on about 50 niche categories for which all kinds of news and information gets funneled. That said, let's just get into today's news. I was going to do it today. I still might. What I want to do is I want to launch another show, and that show will be a series of watching TV shows or movies live. But what you're going to witness is basically just a splash screen with me and chat, and we'll be watching a show and pausing it, making commentary, talking about the nature of the show and the content within it. I actually like this idea mainly to kind of end up talking about it in real time, not just as a podcast alone, but I want to do I'll be posting it over at YouTube. I'll be posting it as a podcast. I'll be posting it or streaming it here on Twitch. And so you'll hear bits of the audio track. You won't see any of the video unless there's something special and I screenshot it or pause it and display it. I won't do the totality of the audio. I won't do the totality of the video. But it's all about talking about not just one show, but the whole series of the show. So I'm going to actually start out with something that I haven't watched since its initial launch. So when it came out, I watched Friends. Each episode I watched as it was released. Well, now you can binge watch it, and I'm considering doing this as part of the daily routine. At night, this first episode might just be a demo just to get into the flow of things. But I'm going to start with Friends, episode one, season one, episode one, which aired initially almost 28 years ago. And I want to see its relevance 30 years later. So that's why I'm going to stream it and talk about it. What I see on the screen, what I hear, observations that I've made. I might be able to recall what happened, what I was thinking, you know, 30 years ago, but odds on not. But I've always liked the show. A lot of people don't, but I'm going to do at least the first episode, and then we'll see if I like how this flows and how it works, and I don't get in any trouble because I'm streaming bits of it. I might do other shows. What happened to my audio just now? Hold on one second. I'm sorry. I actually have music playing, but it doesn't look like it. I think it just stopped for a moment. That's weird. Okay. Anyway, this idea will run within the framework of the Continuity Report channel. And we'll go from there. So at any rate, let's get into today's news. I'll reiterate this at the end, and hopefully it's well received and people dig it. I like talking about this stuff, so let's give it a shot. Okay, my first article that I selected today is how 3D printing of organs could revolutionize medicine. And they have a little story at a glance snippet that my aggregator grabs. Researchers recently transplanted a 3D printed ear made from stem cells into a 20-year-old woman born with microtia. Biotech company United Therapeutics this week said it produced a 3D printed human lung scaffold that could be seeded with a patient's own stem cells and create tolerable, transplantable human lungs, which is just a spectacular, amazing feat. I would love to see what the scaffold looks like. The technology in the coming decades could be a game changer for the roughly 10,000 organ transplants that occur annually and the more than 100,000 people standing by on waiting lists. And this is the main element for me that I am always concerned about. I'm very fascinated with technology and its implantation in humans to extend and increase the quality of life for people. Not everybody is in the same situation, and not everybody really has empathy or compassion for others. But for me, I think it's very important that we alleviate any pain and suffering for any human being, and we remove any, if we can, using technology, any generally perceived liabilities. I just recently watched a video of a young girl, I'm not sure how old she was, that didn't have arms or legs past her knees, or actually it was high, I think it was higher than her knees or past her elbows. And she was given two prosthetic legs and was learning to walk and learned so fast that she was running by the end of this 5-minute video. And I think that technology can increase this quality of life and life enjoyment of any age. But the cost is dramatically high. It's just too high to be a tenable position for anybody. You would have to be so wealthy that right now, like limbs, replacement limbs, is so limited that people are choo they get to choose who gets them. Otherwise, they're just kind of these limbs that barely act as anything close to being human. But now we can leverage technology. 3D printing is going to revolutionize this even more so. There are organizations that get together and produce 3D printed limbs at substantially lower cost. And that is why I keep on saying that competition is the key to bettering society. If the sole source of a solution is one company or two companies or one political party or two political parties, in all ways there is abuse in one way or another, right? When it's a duopoly, there's only limited responsibility to the rest of society, and it allows people to exploit it financially. And to me, you have to be sociopathic to do that kind of thing. But when there's copious amounts of competitors, price is low, the economy doesn't suffer because everybody is competing, and you have to provide better services. And as time goes on, that increases the benefit, because if there are 10 companies, 20 companies, or people producing something, the next one to get more customers has to do a little bit more, be a little bit better than the next person. And you'd be surprised how much customer service alone benefits something. And I watch this happen with new restaurants, with new businesses. that aren't food based. All across the gamut of enterprise, when it first starts out, it's always amazing. And then as time goes on, it degrades in time slowly, unless they're hyper focused on one particular product that is more exclusive and higher end. But then it degrades. Time causes the enterprise to degrade. And when there isn't enough competition, it just gets exacerbated. Price goes up, services don't increase, or they decline because they try to keep the growth, the profitability going without doing better. So this article is over at The Hill, and it's by Joseph Guzman, and it has a photo of an ear in a Petri dish from 3D Biotherapeutics. So the story at a glance is that a bio company named United Therapeutics this week produced a 3D human ear. And it says surgeons in San Antonio successfully transplanted a 3D printed human ear implant made from stem cells into a 20-year-old woman who was born with microtia, a rare birth defect where the outer ear is deformed. I'm not sure what the cost is. Let's see. I'm going to scroll down. It says the company is working. The company called it the world's most complex 3D printed object and expects human clinical trials in the next 5 years for a human lung scaffold. And the benefit of this is that you don't necessarily need immunosuppression, which if your body rejects it, then you have to, you can go into toxic shock and you can meet your demise because of this implantation. And it tends to be rather catastrophic. You know, one day everything's fine and the next day things are really a nightmare. So it says there's millions and millions of people who can't get on the waiting list because they don't qualify. So there's really a need for organs, says Adam Feinberg, co-founder of regenerative medicine company Fluidform and professor of biomedical engineering and material science engineering at Carnegie Mellon University. So Feinberg helped develop a form of 3D bioprinting called Fresh, which involves re-engineering tissue in a support gel to keep the structure secure during printing. Fluidform has since used the process to build parts of the human heart, including ventricles, valves, and blood vessels, which I find it is amazing. I'd have to look to see. I haven't looked at the biomedical printing element of things, but I suppose that scaffolding allows you to keep things separate because flesh just is kind of floppy. It doesn't have any firm form when you are just, you know, holding it in your hand. You know, a heart just kind of collapses. It has some density, but it still just collapses. I'm really curious how they print this out because I haven't witnessed it. I've not looked into it. It says, Skylar Scott said, I think while the dream of tissue engineering has lived on, its ability to really create tissue is only really starting to look like a real possibility. Yeah, just now. That wasn't very cleanly said, but we get it. Let's go on to the next article. A new AT&T subscriber is no longer going to get HBO Max. You know what? I didn't post the very first article, so let me go back and throw that in chat. And it'll be in the show notes. Don't worry. If you are interested in this kind of stuff, you can follow the link through Hometown. New AT&T subscribers will no longer get HBO Max or any other video service. This was aggregated into the Word in Tech. It says most wireless carriers offer to pull you to their side of a free streaming service video on demand subscription, but now AT&T won't be giving you HBO Max to new customers and hasn't replaced it with a different service either. The carrier stealthily discontinued its top tier unlimited elite plan for new subscribers this week and added a new one that doesn't include HBO Max anymore. The new top plan is called Unlimited Premium, which comes in at the same $85 a month single line. But like with the now grandfathered Elite plan, premium subscribers get unlimited talk data, 4K streaming, no slowdowns even if you use a lot of data, a promise AT&T introduced for its priciest tier. Let's go over to The Verge, and Umar Shakir is the author of this article, and it says if you buy something from The Verge link, Vox Media may earn a commission, and they link to their ethics statement, and I like to make that abundantly clear. I am not affiliated with Vox. I'm not affiliated with The Verge. I don't know who Umar Shakir is other than an author of this article. They're basically letting us know that this priciest tier of AT&T is no longer going to have HBO Max. That has been around for quite some time, but AT&T is now nixing it. I use quite a bit of data from my service. I don't think that HBO Max alone would be the reason why I would sign up. Honestly, what I am interested in is coverage. I want to know that wherever I go, I'm still accessible. That way people can contact me wherever I am, regardless of where I am, unless I turn off my phone. AT&T Wireless customers can also currently play two specific cloud games via a web browser due to a partnership with Google. Batman Arkham Knight is still available until June 15th, and AT&T also added a streamable version of Control last month. It's also teased even in bigger plans for cloud gaming that might let users try a game before they buy it, carrying their progress over to the full version. That's neat. AT&T has also been offering 6 months of Google Stadia Pro for more than a year and still does today. And it's also started offering subscribers 6 months of NVIDIA GeForce Now, which is kind of an on-demand streaming service. But you not only do you have to sign up separately for it, but you have to buy the game so that you can actually stream it through GeForce Now. It's not something that you're a subscriber of GeForce Now and you get all of these games. That's not how it works. That's pretty much limited right now to like Sony and Microsoft. But with GeForce Now, you can stream it to a browser, but you have to own the game and link the account to a service that verifies your ownership of a game. And even that isn't really ownership of a game. It's a perpetual license. I know it gets a little muddy, but it is what it is. And I like to talk about this stuff. So let's go on to the next one. The next article is in the Warcrafters channel. This is actually something that I really dig for those who are interested in technology, but still maybe are learning about it. You get to build pretend PCs for free in the PC Building Simulator 2 open beta. A PC Building Simulator is a game about building a PC, a computer. Let's be frank, sounds a bit silly. Why would you build a PC if you could play a game about building PCs? So why would you do this? Well, some people like that. It's kind of like house builder, all kinds of stuff. There's a car repair, there's tank repair, there's all kinds of simulators out there, and people dig them. I mean, power washing simulator is just you walking around trying to grow your power washing business, and it's actually a lot of fun. It's more chill, relaxing, and just hanging out, and not just screamo. So people dig it, and it says here that it built up a big following in early access on Steam, where it holds a very positive rating across more than 34,000 user reviews, and it was enough of a success that a sequel was announced earlier this year. So let's click the link. I suspect that somebody's probably going to own this, buy this out from under the developer. This is an article over at PC Gamer by Andy Chalk. Anyone who tries the beta will get 15% off the purchase price of the full game when it's out, according to the article. That is PC Building Simulator. Let me see here if there's something else. Yeah, to give it a whirl, just pop around to the Epic Games Store page and scroll down a bit until you see Add to Cart and click on that. And then check out as usual and it's all yours. Yeah, I'm not sure if it's over on Steam. It is. I mean, it built up a big following on Steam. So let me see if it is actually on Steam. I'll do this while I'm streaming and not before. It looks like only the original PC Building Simulator is on Steam. That's interesting. There's an esports expansion for building PC Building Simulator. Anyway, go check it out. It's over in open beta at the Epic Games Store. The next article. Pardon that cough. I'm really sorry. I try not to cough on air. So the next article is Tesla plans to split its stock 3-for-1, according to an annual proxy statement. Tesla is splitting its stock 3-for-1, according to the company's annual proxy statement. Tesla shares have increased in price nearly 50% since the last stock split 2 years ago. Oracle co-founder Larry Ellison is also leaving the board, and they plan to split that stock. So let's see here. Tesla is currently trading at just shy of $700 a share. And there is a spike that is, yeah, there's a spike that's coming. Let's see. Yeah, it's going to be going up. Trading on this statement. A stock split happens when a company portions up its shares into more smaller shares. Basically, it makes it more attractive to acquire shares at a lower price. The real problem here is it doesn't actually increase anything other than there are more shares out there and room for people to purchase at a lower rate and the price will increase. As opposed to, let's see here. I'm doing a search. It is still Berkshire Hathaway. So Berkshire stocks are, and it's a particular class of share. Let me pull it up here real quick. Yeah, so Berkshire Hathaway has a Class A share, and it's a particular type of classification of share. And it's trading right now at just shy of $440,000 a share. So, and that's because that stock is tied to a whole lot of assets. And because of that, it's worth more, and it's never split, and there aren't a lot of them out there. Let's see. I'm not sure what its volume was. Yeah, I'd have to dig around, but that's just a side note. So when the stock splits, there's going to be three times as many shares out there. And Mary Meisenzahl is the author of this article over at businessinsider.com. And that's pretty much the nuts and bolts of this article. You can go over and read more about it. It says the price of Tesla stock has increased 43.5% since the company's last stock split nearly 2 years ago. So seeking to split stock is common among tech companies right now. Amazon's 20-for-1 split just went into effect, and Google has a split plan for later this summer, according to the article. Let me see something real quick. So Amazon's at $109.65 and dropped $6.50 in after-hours trading. But it makes it more approachable. So and it's just its perceived value is just spectacular. But everybody's buying from Amazon, so that's why it's probably going to continue to increase until another competitor comes out and has the same functions and better customer service. I think the only way to make Amazon better would be better customer service. And that's nothing more than a tax on the bottom line of the business. Not to mention removing things that are not necessarily of the same quality as other things. So there's a lot of caveat emptor that you have to if you don't police your quality when you are about to make a decision at buying from Amazon, you really should review who's selling and what it really is. But more on that if necessary. We can talk about it later. That said, truckers warn skyrocketing diesel fuel prices are making U.S. supply chain and trucking industry unsustainable. If you haven't looked at diesel while you're looking at your awe-inspiring price per gallon here in the States, diesel's around $5.70 on average in the United States. So depending on where you are, it's well above $6. Where I am, it's $5.80 or something like that a gallon. And regular gas, the entry-level gas, is $5 where I am. So a truck passing a sign at a Flying J truck stop in Pearl, Mississippi in April, the trucking industry offsets diesel prices through a fuel surcharge, which is calculated through a base rate that is usually added to a shipper's freight bill, which is just awesome, right? And it tells you exactly what I've been saying in my previous streams, that the leading indicator as to inflation is going to be diesel prices. Or gas in general, right? So diesel is primarily for bigger trucks that need basically something that why they need diesel and not just unleaded gas is really, you know, lost. It doesn't need to be discussed, I guess. But this article is over at businessinsider.com by Grace K. I just want to make sure that I get that in there. And it says, truckers are sounding the alarm on rocketing diesel prices. They've been rocketing before, too. And that leads to increased pricing. Done and done. There's just no ifs, ands, or buts about it. The price of diesel is the leading indicator because all of these trucks that cross the country require diesel, and it's exploitive. The price of diesel does not have to be that high. It's been much lower in the past, and yet it was still a viable option. And now it's $5.20. So really, what is the exploitation? I'm really curious. If you're a trucker and you are in the industry, and know about this part of it, come and talk to me, because I understand the trucker's frustration. But this increase in price is going to lead to job loss, because what's going to happen is businesses are going to hit that wall where they can't charge more for their product, and the blowback is going to be automated driving. But the problem here is that there's automated driving, but it's largely under the control of one or two companies, and that means it can be very exploitive in its deployment. So it says Austin Smith, owner of Iron River Express, said it's cost him $20,000 a week to keep his three trucks running. If something drastic doesn't change in the next few weeks or months, I promise you, you'll see empty shelves everywhere you look. Smith wrote in a post that was shared nearly 290,000 times. You'll see chaos as people fight for the basic necessities of everyday life. Yep. And it's because the price has gone through the roof. It was already higher than regular unleaded gas prior to this really quick Spike. Let me see something real quick. Obviously, the only thing that I have knowledge of is here in the States in any real way. But let me see if I can find a longer. Oh, goodness, really? This is horrible. So, prices for diesel fuel in 2017 were half the price. Actually, less than half the price. They were $2.50. I'm rounding up, actually. So it was $2.50 in 2017. It was again $2.50 in 2020. It had briefly spiked up to about $3.40. But after October of 2020, it started skyrocketing. The only time it declined, and that was basically very brief, was February of 2022. As early ago as January, February, it was only $3.50 or $3.60. And now it's $5.70 and continuing to trend up. So this is obviously just greedflation. So it's running at a loss. Diesel prices have surged over 76% in the past year. Last month, Insider reported that diesel market is facing its worst crisis since the 70s. This is what I was talking about previously, that in the 70s there was an oil and gas shock, but there is no oil and gas shock, not borne by our domestic policy. Not as far as I know. I don't know. Maybe I don't know of something that's going on, this person says a trucker who owns a small carrier in Maryland told Insider that he's had to take loads at a loss. Yeah. That's rather amazing. At any rate, some companies are going to close up shop. And to me, this is all about squeezing out competition. Those who have the ability to survive will survive, and those who don't, we'll have to become employees of those who can. And I'm not even talking about the ones that are just driving the trucks. I'm talking about, this is a squeeze from another level of supplier. I'm talking about gas. It's obvious that there's been so much merger and acquisition that there's no real competition to lower. There's no pressure anywhere to lower the price other than political, sociological, and if you're sociopathic, you don't care about that. You're all about making money and not society at large. The next article, I have to continue on, otherwise I'll just never get through this in an hour. The next article is over in the Continuity Report. Marvel is recruiting MCU antiheroes for Thunderbolts and more movie news. The Joker script is done. You get Ghostbusters sequel and animated film. New projects for Scarlett Johansson, Christoph Waltz, and Julia Garner. So let's go over to this article at Rotten Tomatoes. Usually they've got kind of a compilation of things. Greg Dean Schmitz is the author of this over at RottenTomatoes.com. And they talk about Marvel recruiting MCU antiheroes. If you're interested in this kind of stuff, it gets really deep. That's why I appreciate Rotten Tomatoes. But it's a lot to talk about within this particular show. So that's why I like to post it. You can go over and check it all out. It says the original 1996 team, for example, they're talking about MCU. Was led by Helmut Zemo from Captain America Civil War, but the rest of the team hasn't appeared in the MCU yet. Then there's the current Thunderbolts, most of who aren't reformed villains at all, like Hawkeye, Spectrum, from WandaVision, and America Chavez, from Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. And there's many others. Abominations coming, Yelena Belova from Black Widow, Ghost, Taskmaster from Black Widow. It says U.S. agent, and I don't remember U.S. agent, but that's from Falcon and the Winter Soldier. And that shows Winter Soldier, Sebastian Stan. So there's a whole lot more coming, and it says there's no release date for Thunderbolts, but filming next year suggests something like 2025 or late 2024. Yeah, I can imagine. But there is a lot coming out of, I think it's Phase 5 of the MCU. So let's continue on to the next article. Supermassive and 2K drop final, The Quarry trailer before its June 10th launch. This is kind of late in the game, considering it's the 11th. But I've been watching some people playing The Quarry. It's quite interesting. Kind of an ethical, ethics-driven decision-making game. And I have yet to get, or I should say, those who are playing it that I have seen have yet to get too deep into it. Right now, what's happening is decisions you make are leading you to other people that you acted as throughout the game. And so it says The Quarry is set to release on June 10th, although this was posted June 10th. And Supermassive Games and 2K shared one last trailer during the Summer Game Fest, which is underway. Check it out now. And let me just go straight over to the article. This is over at rpgfan.com. Gio Castillo is the author of this. And you'll recognize the faces, but you may not. Like for me, I had to verify, are these people, real actors, or are they based on the real people, real actors? And so when you're watching the graphics, you're like, wait, I know that actor. Wait, is that the real voice of that person? Or is it somebody kind of simulating it like a deepfake? And so you go and look and you find out that, yeah, all of these people that you recognize in the computer graphics are actually the people that are acting in the game. So to me, this is a really fun kind of merged reality game, as if the person was in it. So it says David Arquette is in it, Ariel Winters, Brenda Song, Evan Nevagora, Halston Sage, Justice Smith, Miles Robbins. I don't know how to pronounce that name. Shaban, I guess. I don't recall how to spell how to pronounce it. Williams, Skylar Gisondo, Zach Tinker, Ethan Supley, Grace Zabriskie, Lance Henriksen, Lynn Shea, and Ted Raimi are all in this game. And it's a blast. It's actually really fun to watch if it is just a little bit chill. Okay, so let me continue on. The next article is Roots of Pasha is a Stone Age farming sim launching in 2022. A brand new farming sim from Argentinian devs Soda Den called Roots of Pasha was featured during this year's Summer Game Fest. You can watch the video below, or you can go over to YouTube and do a search, or more preferably, I would like you to go through Hometown over to rpgfan.com and read this article from Gio Castillo that is basically a Stone Age. It isn't basically, it is a Stone Age farming sim. And you do town building, you do resource gathering, aggregation, mining, animal domestication, pretty much everything that you would do on a farm. And it says here, Roots of Pasha is a Stone Age farming sim where you help your clan develop the ideas that helped shape humanity. In a time when there weren't stores to buy seeds or anything else, you'll transform the world around you by contributing and working with your clan and be a part of a thriving Stone Age community. I guess it's prepping us for the possible future. Yeah, I don't know. Roots of Pasha might be a documentary. So the next article is over in the Aerith channel, which is all really about world building. For the first time ever, the 2023 Grammys will have a Best VGM award. So let's click over to the article. It too is over at RPG Fan by Gio Castillo. And it says the Recording Academy has announced that they'll be presenting several new awards during the 2023 Grammys, including Best Score Track, Soundtrack for a Video Game and Other Interactive Media. And the official description is that they recognize excellence in score soundtrack albums comprised predominantly of original scores and created specifically for or as a companion to current video game and or other interactive media released within the qualified period. So technically, it's a video game award. Pretty neat. The author says, in any case, you know what venerable, long-running institution has always given VGM its due? RPG Fan, of course. You need only peruse our music page, where they review all sorts of RPG-related music, from soundtracks to arrangements and everything in between. Heck, that's what Rhythm Encounter's all about. So go listen to that. It's a podcast, by the way. Go and check it out. Okay, the next article is over in Band of Bezel. It says, welcome to Bezel World. This is an article that's over at Hodinkee. I'm just going to go over there so I can catch up on some time here. So this is an article by Jack Forster, and the illustration that you're seeing is by Andy Gottschalk. I dig it. You know, their halo is a watch bezel. It's pretty neat. So the author says, I have to admit at the outset that I don't actually know for sure, without a shadow of doubt, that the bezel is the most talked about watch component, but I think it probably is close. Cases are too general to be in the running, and crowns are often too innocuous to merit such discussion. And let's face it, with the modern automatic watches, you're probably not going to touch the crown very often unless your watch has run down and you have to reset it. Date windows are, pardon me, more or less binary as objects for discussion. You either love them or hate them. I'm not a big fan of them. And they start out with that. So bezels, on the other hand, although they tend to come in a fairly small number of basic functional categories, also come in almost infinite number of styles. And as many cases are essential to the identity of the watch. So, and that's why I actually named the channel that this is aggregated into, Band to Bezel, because I think the bezel is probably beyond the internal workings of it, I think the bezel is the one personalized element. That's what's really attracting you, along with the face. That is where the aesthetic is found. The case back and case itself is largely it's a chunk of this or that, and sometimes it's a window, but it's the movement itself and the watch band and bezel that make it up in terms of personalization and quality of construction and basically what somebody wants. I'm about, after I do the show today, I'm going to be watching wristwatch or watch restoration. Let me see. Let me make sure. I'm going to look back at my TV real quick. Wristwatch Revival is what it's called, which is a YouTube channel. Mainly because they've got a watch that they're going to repair that was dumped in seawater for a while. At any rate, they talk about these bezels here. Pretty involved, right? Elapsed time bezels. elapsed count up and count down, and pilots watch slide rule bezels. That looks really neat. All of these watches tend to be round pieces. For whatever reason, we know a clock, right? It's around, goes around in a circle. But breaking out of this design of being round is something that I really appreciate in digital watches, because sometimes we just don't want that aesthetic, but round definitely is the thing for watches. Tachymeters, 24-hour, there's a lot of different types that go in there, but those are the main categories. There's a compass bezel, which I've never really interacted with. So at any rate, if you want to learn more about it, go over to the Hodinkee Weekend Edition, Welcome to Bezel World. And again, you can follow the link from Boomtown. So just briefly, this article is over in the Hatch Ideas channel. Today's mortgage and refinance rates for June 11th, 2022. The rate spike as inflation soars. I'm just going to click the link and take us over to Business Insider. I have been warning people for several months now, since I started the show. Beforehand, I was warning people in person, but now here on the show, I warn people that mortgage rates, refinance rates, everything is going kind of through the roof. Just 6 months ago, you could have gotten a rate that was closer to 2.5, 3, depending on your credit rating. And now we're upwards at 5, heading towards 5.5, and higher. I think by, again, inflation is going to continue in my estimation, my understanding, and my analysis. And it's probably going to head more towards the 8% for a 30-year fixed, mainly because people think that the stimulus, okay, so billions of dollars have and continue to be given out to businesses. And because of that, there is a very firm understanding that there is a lot of money in the system. That means to acquire it, if you were to leave all of this at 4% or 2%, largely 2%, then people could easily acquire it because they've got the money. But this $5, $6 billion that went out as stimulus, let me see, actually, it was trillion. Let me make sure of all of them. So I'm trying to find the, so I think it was $6 trillion went out as sorry for the yeah, I think it was total was $6 trillion of stimulus. And this money was really, it was given to people, but businesses got most of it. You know, individuals, no. Businesses, yes. Quite a bit. But this is just the latest injection of capital. And that's the problem here. The previous deployments of capital went to businesses to save them. In 2008, it was banks. Did some of them pay it back? Yes. Did a lot of them pay it back? Yes. Did all of them pay it back? I don't think so. And before that was another stimulus. And before that was another stimulus. We've always been injecting money, and that is diluting. It's causing the consumer price index to increase because there's more money chasing fewer items, and instead of people just producing what they need and getting what they get, and spending what they need, there are people out there that must acquire more of it. Just because there's money out there doesn't mean that, hey, let's ramp up our prices so that I can get more money just because it's easier to get something. Right? Well, that's not how it works. Businesses seek profit, and if I were to give more fish, I don't personally need more fish, right? Like, I don't have to eat more fish. I am that one person. This is what I need. But that's not how businesses operate. Businesses operate with, well, there's a whole ton of money out there. Let's get as much of it as we can. And it becomes an untenable position because all of that money is going somewhere. It's not going to the people. It's getting consolidated to the people that have the means to provide a service. And if they see that they can get more money, then they start charging for more, or they start charging more to acquire that more money. It's the same service, it's the same benefit, but now they're charging more because there's more money in the system. It didn't make it any easier for anybody. They were getting by because they weren't getting paid by businesses. That's what the stimulus was all about. Or businesses were going to shutter. And unfortunately, instead of, and it wasn't even about risk. The stimulus money that came out from the federal government was born based on a biological hazard that was destroying business and society in general. We're over 1 million people in the United States because of a crap response from the previous president. And when we finally get a response, the sociopaths decide that they're going to uptick their resistance to wearing a freaking mask. They're insane. It is insane to have that mentality. Well, when businesses took a metric ton of risk and started to collapse, instead of the bank that took the risk or the mortgage company that took the risk failing because they actually took that risk and it didn't succeed, and giving that money to the people, they gave it to the banks and they gave it to the companies. Well, in this particular case, the businesses fail. The businesses fail, and the nation gives all of their tax money to these companies and to select individuals. Not everybody got it. I certainly didn't. I got zero stimulus. My company didn't get any stimulus. Everybody that I know didn't get any stimulus, but businesses got stimulus. Again, businesses got stimulus. And instead of paying it to people, they either shuttered or they fired people and all kinds of machinations. But the problem is that the people still don't get the reward. They paid the things that they needed to pay because they were no longer being able to get paid by the businesses that, for all intents and purposes, they were taking risk that didn't store money so that if something happens, they could pay employees. A lot of businesses are going to get pissed off that I say that, but that's the truth. If the business was a smart business, it would have been storing money so that if something catastrophic happens, there was still continuity of operations. That's not what happened. So all of this is greedflation. Mortgage rates are what they are because the businesses need to make money and mitigate risk. And there's a lot of risk in giving somebody $600,000 or $250,000 or any, I mean, it's all subjective, and you end up with a doubling of the rate in 4 years. Seems a little excessive. And not even in 4 years, because 2 years ago, it was half this rate. 6 months ago, it was within 2%, 2.5%, maybe 3%. Again, depending on your loan history. So let's continue on to the next article. This is a long time monitoring for me. I'm very interested in why something happens. And this has always been one that I've found interesting and sad. And this too, I think, relates to greed. And when you look at the documented history of this, you also find out that there was some manipulation and conspiracy, I would think, to get this done in a way that by today's standards wouldn't or shouldn't be allowed. And there's three other buildings that are identical to this that are now being monitored regularly and shored up. And this is leading to $1 billion claim by the people, by the survivors. So a year after the Surfside condo collapse in Southern Florida, investigators still don't know the exact cause. So it says here, nearly 1 year after the deadly condominium collapse in Surfside, Florida, federal investigators still haven't pinned down what specifically caused the failure. So this is over, by the way, in the Daily News show. So what happened here was building collapsed. I'm just going to pause this video. This article is over at abcnews.go.com, and it's by Laura Romero and Jared Kofsky. Investigators say many factors likely contributed to the failure, and hopefully none of this happens to the other buildings that are sister buildings of this site. And so it killed 98 people, and they're saying that it was many factors. And based on me reviewing it, and I'm not a subject matter expert in any of these categories, so like I wouldn't know one type of concrete from another without sending it in for analysis and somebody doing a test on its strength. I do have a product that I'm coming out with that has to do with concrete. I'll announce it here when I launch it. And I have another one right there, another product right there that I still haven't announced, but it's ready to go. Might do a Kickstarter. I don't know if y'all are interested in that. Let me know. I won't show these products until I actually launch them. So it says, none of the hypotheses is considered a leading theory at this point, says Glenn Bell. During an online presentation to the National Construction Safety Team Advisory Committee, one of the lead federal investigators, Glenn Bell, said the National Institute of Standards and Technology has not ruled out any scenarios and currently has about 24 hypotheses that are being actively considered in its ongoing investigation. And yes, it's quite a complex situation. But based on what I think happened, I think that inferior building processes, when the buildings were actually built, led to a weak support structure that had a limited amount of tolerance. So if you build something, it's kind of like what happened to the Arecibo dish. More and more stuff got attached to it, and then it degraded over time. The weight pulled in the pillars and destroyed the satellite dish. Quite easy to discern the bulk concept of it, but the minutiae as to why it actually, and pointing at this as the structural failure cause, and not just the initiation, but the cause. Because you can watch the video and you can see clearly what happened, what the result was, and where it kind of looks like it started, but what was the real cause. It's the difference between cause of death and manner of death. And so they've been investigating and studying the structural failure for over 40 years, this person for 40 years, and they can say that the investigation is one of the most difficult and complex of its type ever undertaken. And based on what I have seen in my general understanding of this, is that I think that the cement supports were too thin, the building's integrity based on the density of the steel reinforced concrete the steel wasn't properly spaced out, and so the load was disproportionately balancing on these posts, and other things led to the concrete floors punching through these pillars, and that pulled the building down. And in some of the videos, you can actually see that a whole floor had already given way on the first floor. A ceiling had given way on the first floor into the garage, where a post had already collapsed. And it seems pretty obvious, but not what caused that. But there are other things. So it's quite a fascinating issue. And one of the other things that I noticed was I don't think that the building was within its weight tolerance for these posts. I think that as modern times came on, the desire to uplift these condos to a higher level of quality to appeal to million-dollar buyers led to the collapse, because they were putting 3-foot by 3-foot tiles on the walls, the floor, adding all kinds of features and functions by way of heavier items into these buildings, bigger TVs, bigger electronic devices, bigger, better, more functional refrigerators and ovens and whatnot, quality items of higher weight. And I think all of that led to it basically no longer being able to be supported. So we'll see what the final findings are of this. But the lawsuit that has been brought on by this is still ongoing. I think there might be a settlement on the way of over $1 billion. So let's continue on to the next article. And that is about casting fabrication, how to have their sketches turned into molds and then casted. This is over at jewelrymakingjournal.com. I've done all of this stuff before. And so I wanted to at least highlight a discussion that's taking place over at jewelrymakingjournal.com. And they're asking, this is a person named Riza, how they can turn their sketches into molds and then casted. And, it's a conversation, so I can't really be specific about it because the people are actually talking. But what ends up happening is you have to get an engineer to take your sketches and turn them into 3D models that can be used to cut out of one portion of another or to have a mold made, depending on what it is. But the sketch can be turned into something that can be injection molded or wax casted, and then you can make copies of it. But you have to look for it. It's not as easy as just, but it is as easy as just doing a Google search. But it isn't as easy as, oh, you can just do this. Because depending on the complexity, depending on what it is, you have to get the right subject matter expert. I've had things that made to my specification that required an engineer. I've had stuff made that is to my requirement that is made, cast, formed by a jeweler or by some other subject matter expert. You really do have to just go and find them. I've had stuff made by another company where it had multiple steps and had to go through a manufacturing process and turned into something that can be duplicated in a regular process and not just a mold per se, but it had several steps that led to a final product that you can hold in your hand. So go and check out that little short article, but if you want more information, you can obviously reach out to me and we can talk. It is part of what I do. So, as a business, not just, hanging out and talking, but well, I mean, I can point you to other people and there is no fee or anything. At any rate, the next article is over in the Jewel Crafting channel, because they're looking for a kiln. And it says, any suggestions for kiln for silver clay making? And this is over in the jewelry making journal as well. The article's question is by Donna Rose. And they're looking into a kiln. So this one person says that they've got a Paragon mini kiln, which they're happy with. Another one is saying, look for one that has programming. It really depends on, there's another one that's a Paragon SC2 kiln. And this other person says, even Heat Kingpin 88. I have a kiln, but it's really about the process. Any kiln nowadays that is used for enameling, for instance, you can do silver clay with. And so you really want to stick within your budget, but still have the ability to do the process for silver clay. Because depending on your source for the silver clay, it's not an easy thing to do. So look into it. Sometimes it's a multi-step process where you have to do certain things to get whatever it is you're making ready to go in the kiln, and you need additional materials. It really depends on what it is you're working with, and they don't really go into great detail. It just says they want to add silver charms and pendants to a one-of-a-kind product, semi-precious stones and whatnot. So sometimes you can do it, and it's easy, sometimes not so much. Let's continue on. The next article is in the Earnings Watch. Profit warnings kicked into high gear, and there's still no slowdown in sight. U.S. companies are warning of earnings misses at historically high rates that are signs that the pace could accelerate. But Wall Street analysts don't seem to be listening too closely. On Monday, the stock market, the Dow in particular, dropped just shy of 900 points, and others dropped as well. This article is over at Market Watch by Tommy Kilgore. It might be Tomi, T-O-M-I. So the S&P dropped 3%. Let's see if there's anything else in here. Snap continues its drop. It's not, people were surprised by it, but this has actually been talked about for quite a while. Target is dropping. They're actually doing other things as well, limiting what is getting purchased and what is getting purchased. Not just the volume, but what is going to be purchased. Putting things on deep sale. Walmart is just massive, and they've got small budgets, and yet they're billionaires. Hey, the people that they're hiring are not ever going to be billionaires, but you know, you don't become a billionaire by having compassion and understanding and giving everybody a livable wage for the job that they're doing. No, it's always commensurate with the value you hold within a company. And guess what? Some of these jobs are seen as not worth a livable wage. I know it's shocking, but business leaders, business and billionaires in general, don't really care about the whole strata of business. And we are literally bred to believe that. The last thing that I heard from somebody, which was yesterday, it was really hilarious to hear it too, was the only way that I can get more money is if I leave my current job. Because even if I threaten them with leaving and they offer me greater wages, they resent me for demanding pay that is commensurate with my experience, knowledge, and capabilities. Thus, why another company would hire me at a greater valuation. Yeah, we've been bred to believe that, and businesses buy into it because it's self-supportive. It's self-soothing. They're basically giving themselves hugs, because if they lose somebody that's more expensive, they can get somebody that is cheaper, yet they have to train them and build them into the company culture and whatnot. So all of these businesses don't have any issues about the economy when they are booming, but the moment that things start to slow down, it's all hell is breaking loose. The next article is titled "Laura Ingraham Says the January 6th Hearings Bombed Despite Reeling in Nearly 20 Million Views Compared to Fox's 3 Million." And it says President Donald Trump gives Laura Ingraham a kiss after inviting her on stage during the Turning Point USA Student Action Summit. Yeah, this isn't grooming, though, folks. Having student political organizations that are decidedly leaning one direction is not grooming, but teaching people about culturally responsive actions in school or teaching people American history, that is grooming, folks. So yeah, 20 million people viewed the January 6th hearings where they initiate the process of disclosing all of their information. They're going to disclose to the American people just how pervasive the effort was. And I find it rather fascinating to talk about. So again, that quote-unquote news organization did not air the hearing live and featured hosts who downplayed the Capitol riot. And it's something that I say to people that in times where learning needs to be done, the people that need the learning most refuse. It is a matter of willful ignorance, and I despise that. I think that you should have your preconceived notions challenged, but sometimes it goes above the pale that you just can't. You can't sit there and listen to it anymore because you have to walk away. Otherwise, you'll start going down the rabbit hole of trying to explain just how bad this is. This article is over at businessinsider.com, written by Katie Belovic. And Ingraham texted Trump advisors during the Capitol riot, urging Trump to call off the rioters per the panel. And that's really what it is, because behind the scenes, and again, I say this, that abuse happens in the dark, in shining light, whistleblowing and whatnot, should be encouraged because nobody should have to suffer from somebody's abuse. And walking away isn't good enough. Walking away and not affecting change so that more people aren't abused makes you complicit in the abuse. We as a society have responsibility to each other to prevent stuff like this from happening. More people should have come out and said, I'm against this, because this was an attempted coup. If I had done it alone, right? If you had grabbed something and charged into Congress demanding change, you'd be in jail right now, charged with assault or conspiracy to assault. Or whatever the federal government sees this ultimately as, and others have been charged with sedition and worse, which I don't know how you can get worse than sedition, charged with sedition. But anyway, their claim is that it bombed to get the word out, and that was 20 million people. I think that the marketing on this was rather weak, but it could have reached more people, and I think all of this discussion about it will reach more people. And it's pretty obvious what went down. It definitely wasn't a bunch of vacationers swinging by the Capitol. Let's continue on to the next article. Seth Green pays $260,000 ransom for a stolen Bored Ape Ethereum NFT meant to feature in his new TV show. Seth Green has paid 165 Ether Ethereum for the return of a Bored Ape NFT stolen last month. I've always thought that this was supposed to be impossible to do, to steal an NFT, to steal anything crypto. But I keep hearing about it. I keep seeing it happen. The NFT, Bored Ape NFT 8398, is set to feature in Seth Green's new show, White Horse Tavern. Actor Seth Green has been reunited with a stolen ape Ethereum NFT and appears to have $260,000 gone out the door to make sure that it was acquired. The star of animated shows including Family Guy and Robot Chicken lost four Bored Ape NFTs worth more than $300,000. I guess one was $260,000. Ryan Hogg over at BusinessInsider.com wrote this article. And let's see here. So it was sourced originally from BuzzFeed, BuzzFeed News. So I didn't think that Seth Green would be interested in this kind of stuff, but obviously I'm wrong. The copyright to Bored Ape NFT Yacht Club collection, which set off a frenzied buying craze among celebrities in January, is owned by its creators, Yuba Labs. And that's because copyright can be licensed, but never ultimately taken away until the time years passed. So it's like 116 years. Or a certain amount. I'd have to reference it again. It's off the top of my head. What the total length of the copyright is. So these won't enter public domain for a considerable amount of time, or until somebody challenges what I think is probably something very actionable. Just nobody has done it yet, which is if something is created through automation, it can't have a copyright because it's not put into existence by a human being. It's put into existence by a computer. So taking a picture, it is copyrighted because you are the one taking a picture and you're just using the mechanics of it, the electronic equipment. But if these whales or the Bored Apes, they weren't put together by a human being. If it was done automatically through computer generation or something like that, it doesn't have a copyright because it wasn't a human that was interactive with its creation. That is an argument that I see coming at some point because it's not enumerated in any way other than it has to be created by a human being. I forgot what it was called. The monkey, for lack of a better term, the monkey, I don't remember what it actually was, that took a picture of itself with a camera. The person who owns the camera doesn't have the copyright, and the animal can't have a copyright because it's an embodiment of law that is assigned to a human being. So nobody owns that monkey's picture. And I think that ultimately what's going to end up happening is either the law is going to get addressed, it's going to end up being changed to include anything that leads to the embodiment of a work, be it computer generated or otherwise. But it will take litigation. Just nobody has gotten the stones to go and litigate this. But it'll be interesting to see if it, or when, I should say, when it actually happens, because that is a good foundation for arguing against the copyright being assigned to an NFT. Okay, and ultimately the last article for today is one that I found very funny. So this is in the Hatch Ideas channel, and it says Geico may have to pay $5.2 million to a woman who claims she contracted an STD in a car insured by the company. Geico's facing a $5.2 million legal payout. By the way, she was awarded $5.2 million after asking for $1 million. And the panel that decided the $5.2 million was appealed and it was affirmed $5.2 million. So apparently this woman got busy in a car. It was insured by Geico, and the terms of the insurance policy say that anything that happens in a car, if you are harmed, it is part of the policy that you can claim. So she got an STD. And the author of this article, by the way, is over at businessinsider.com. And it's Ain. I guess her name is Ain, or his name. I'm not even sure. Kane, A-I-N-E, is the first name, and Cain is the last name. And I couldn't stop giggling at this one. I am, I guess, you know, 15 years old in a much older body. My brain is just giggling at this so much. A woman filed a claim with the company after claiming she contracted a sexually transmitted disease in a vehicle insured by Geico. So I guess somebody's gecko caught something. A Missouri court just rejected Geico's appeal in the case. So I think that it's probably done and done. If your policy includes, if your future policy doesn't include a rider that says you can't submit a claim for a biological hazard in your car, I would be surprised, because this is actually setting out so much liability that all you have to do is, I don't know what the evidence is going to be, but if for whatever reason your policy doesn't include an anti-biological claim rider in it, then maybe you can be an instant millionaire. All you have to do is document that you've gotten an STD in a vehicle, and then you can go over to your insurance company. So the arbitrator decided in the woman's favor, awarding her $5.2 million. She initially asked for $1 million. The organization, it wasn't a full court and jury as far as I understand. Let's see. It was an arbitration award. So against Geico, in favor of MO, and they're only referring to the person as MO. I suppose the reputational damage would be substantial if they disclosed the actual name of the person that got an STD in her car or somebody else's car. But that's a hell of a claim, and insurance policies are going to start rising to offset this. But I suppose, you know, get the money where you can. Let's see if there's anything else in here. A related separate federal court case in which Geico disputes the matter is covered under its policy could determine whether the company, which has more than $32 billion in assets, will have to pay out, according to a report from the Kansas City Star. Now, I think that they're already, this is done. It sets a really weird precedent. And of course, Geico did not immediately respond to Insider's request for comment. What do you think? Okay. Well, that is the end of today's daily Ohmtown Daily News Show. I covered about 20 articles, and my news aggregator aggregates things into six main categories: create, news, education, entertainment, social, and technology. And then within it, 50 shows that I intend to bring to Twitch. And I'm not partner at Twitch, so I have very limited storage time, so 14 days. So I take everything that I do and I put it over on YouTube. I also turn it into a podcast that you can get from pretty much anywhere. So be sure to search if you're interested in hearing about just a small portion of the news. About 24, 25 pages of news get aggregated into Ohmtown each day within these categories and these subtopics. I'm more precise in how I aggregate news. There are other news aggregators out there, but it's usually a lot of noise in the news. And so I try to eliminate that by vetting the news that gets aggregated before it gets aggregated. With that in mind, I'm trying to do the show every day at 11 o'clock. Today I got delayed, so I did it at 1 o'clock. And I'm going to be adding another show, The Continuity Report. I might start it tonight. It really depends. And I'll be starting with friends. I'm also going to go back to the beginning of Strange New Worlds and do that episode as well. Either tomorrow or Monday. It really depends. I'm trying not to bite off more than I can chew. But at any rate, if you go to ohmtown.com, you click the little logo for Ohmtown. When you first log into it or when you first access it, it will have the news. But if you've been surfing away and come back, when you click that, it'll refresh with newer news that's been aggregated while you've been surfing. And thank you very much for coming. I'll see you either tonight, and you'll, if you follow me, you'll get a notice either on YouTube or on Twitter or Twitch or pretty much anywhere. I'm trying to be everywhere. But thanks for stopping by. I'll see you possibly tonight. Bye-bye.